Welcome to Morgan Lewis Podcast Central. This is a podcast recording from Morgan Lewis's June 13th, 2017, 10th Anniversary Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference. Morgan Lewis partners Jed Wider and Timothy Levin chaired this 15-part in-depth discussion of U.S. and international advanced hedge fund topics focusing on manager and investor perspectives. Part 10, Cybersecurity Update, Trends and Issues, Microsession. Mark Krotoski will discuss recent cybersecurity trends and issues. Now, on to the podcast.
You may have heard a couple days ago, there was the SEC made an announcement that two co-directors of enforcement were announced. And they said the greatest threat to our markets right now is the cyber threat. And so I think the SEC and other jurisdictions are going to continue to focus on this. But that was something that they focused on as they're taking on these important responsibilities. What we see is not only the SEC is involved in these issues, but we also have the Federal Trade Commission. We also have state enforcers, in particular the New York Department of Financial Services, which we'll talk about. Many of these cases also raise issues of law enforcement. And that's something that we advise clients on is when and under what circumstances should a matter be reported to law enforcement. In addition to those regulators, what makes this area, unfortunately, unnecessarily complex, in my view, is the various state data breach notification laws. So in 2002, California was the first state to enact a data breach notification law, which required customers or individuals whose personally identifiable information was breached to receive a notification. Since that time, there are now 52 U.S. jurisdictions which have their own standards. In some respects, they're similar, but in many respects, they are not. That includes also the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. There's only two states without a data breach notification standard. But what happens when this occurs, if you have client information that includes bank account information with the access codes to get to it, or social security information, and that information is compromised, then there may be a notification requirement to these states. Now, we have assisted companies who've had all 52 U.S. jurisdictions as well as foreign jurisdictions in navigating these issues. But this issue of concurrent jurisdiction is one that we see coming up, and it's often very cumbersome and complex to deal, you know, with many of the different issues. Just to give you an example, many of the states define PII or personally identifiable information differently. Some have very broad definitions, some have narrow definitions. Some states recently are now including usernames and passwords in that definition. But more recently, we had the enactment of the New York Department of Financial Services cybersecurity rule, which is a very significant development. It's significant not only for covered entities that have to comply with this new rule, but if you look at the area of cybersecurity regulation, this development is very significant because it is a very micromanaged regulation. It now requires covered entities to do a number of things, and if they don't, they could be subject to regulatory enforcement. When this rule was first announced in its draft form, it was touted as the first in the nation regulation. And Morgan Lewis did participate in the comment period. We submitted two letters during the comments, and now it is enacted effective March 1. However, there are many parts of this rule that are going to be phased in over time. There are a number of requirements, though, that establish new standards and obligations. For example, for covered entities, there's an audit trail requirement. So covered entities must maintain records that can be used to determine if there was a breach or the scope of the breach for 3 years, and must maintain records of financial transactions for 6 years. There's also a written cybersecurity program obligation, as well as an annual CISO report, among many other requirements. We wanted to highlight a couple of features of this new rule. One is the notification requirement. Now, many of the states where there is a data breach allow for a reasonable period of time to determine the scope of the breach before it's actually reported, and many states will say within 60, 45, or 90 days. Instead, this new regulation has a 72-hour requirement. of a cybersecurity event. And cybersecurity event is very broadly defined as any act or attempt that is successful or unsuccessful to gain unauthorized access or to disrupt or misuse the information system. And so it's a very broad definition. So what's going to be important is if you are affected by this notification requirement, 72 hours from the determination of that cyber event, there will be a notification obligation. Now, they have two different triggers for the notification. The first one is basically if another government entity, like a state or the SEC or some other government entity, is notified, then the New York Department of Financial Services also wants to be notified. The second trigger is one, again, where we feel these are new and very unnecessarily complex standards, but if there's a cyber event that has a reasonable likelihood of materially harming any materially part of normal operations, then there's an obligation to notify. And again, this is unnecessarily complex. It has two material standards, and it's going to require guidance from counsel and technical advisors to see, you know, if this standard has been triggered. But one of the other things about this rule that we wanted to highlight is the annual compliance certification that will be required. And this starts next February 15th in 2018. Covered entities are going to have to certify that they are complying with all the features of this rule. In addition to this development, one of the concerns when this rule was first being promulgated was, would there be a ripple effect? Would it also encourage other enforcers to consider new standards? And that's what we've seen in May in Colorado for broker-dealers. There is a new cybersecurity rule that has been adopted, and the Secretary of State in Colorado will designate the effective date, but it should be relatively soon. And just to compare some of the standards, under this rule, a broker-dealer must establish and maintain written procedures that are reasonably designed to ensure cybersecurity, and also it has annual cybersecurity risk assessments and other requirements as well. And so what we see here is part of an ongoing trend of more concurrent jurisdictions that are getting involved in cybersecurity, but also different standards that are being developed as well, which makes this area, unfortunately, very complex and in some instances, very difficult to manage. But there's another trend that we wanted to highlight, which deals with third-party cyber risk. And this is becoming very important, particularly for hedge funds and other companies that have hosted environments or shared data with other entities. Now, the New York Department of Financial Services regulation that we just talked about has a new requirement for third parties, and this is one of the phased-in rules. So this rule will not actually take effect until March 1, 2019. However, it is something that we encourage companies to focus on because the SEC and other agencies have been focusing on third-party cyber risks. And so if you look at the New York rule, it will require written policies and procedures based on a risk assessment. It will require a focus on contractual protections, and then as well as a number of other requirements as well. But this is part of a trend in cybersecurity, is the management of third-party cyber risk. Here's an example from 2015 where the Securities and Exchange Commission focused as part of its examination initiative on third-party platforms. And what it said in this statement is that some of the largest data breaches have resulted from hacking of third-party vendors. The SEC actually has taken an enforcement action against a covered entity that had data at a third party that was hosted, and the breach did not occur at the covered entity, it occurred at the hosted environment. And the SEC concluded that that entity did not have sufficient policies and procedures to protect the data. And so what we see with the third party cyber risk is that these agencies will say, it does not matter that someone else is hosting this data. We are going to hold you responsible for the management and protection of that data, even if there is a third party that is hosting it. Now, some of you may have heard of the National Institute of Standards and Technology Cybersecurity Framework. It's a kind of a cornerstone in cybersecurity that's a flexible risk assessment framework. But what's important is you can see that the focus in this area has been on to identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover cybersecurity incidents. But this framework is currently under review, and some are suggesting that supply chain or third-party risk will become part of this framework. And so, again, this is part of the trend in this area. And more recently, the Financial Services Sector Coordinating Council made a recommendation that some of the functions under the NIST standard would include supply chain management and governance. So this is something that I think we're going to continue to see is the third-party management of cyber risk. And so it's something that companies should look at very carefully. And that includes looking at the contracts that you have, looking at the due diligence, what sort of data is being protected in the hosted environment? Is it encrypted? Is there a notification requirement? So if your data is subject to an attack, what are the circumstances in which you'll be notified? And then also a monitoring process as well. I've had the opportunity to assist companies on third-party cyber risk, and I can tell you it's very difficult to understand the circumstances of what happened at a breach at another location and trying to get all the information. And while you might be able to get some of it, it's just very cumbersome to get. And that's why this is becoming a very sensitive area. One other thing to consider is what happens when there is a data breach. What are the types of systems and procedures that you should have in place? And so we can look at this recent WannaCry ransomware that was a global attack. It affected over 100,000 organizations around the world in over 150 countries. And basically what it did is for those organizations that did not have an update on this Microsoft patch, they were subject to this attack, and they were basically, part of their network was locked down, and they were demanded to make a payment to get the data back. In your materials, we have a summary of some of the things that you can do to protect yourself. A lot of this is protection and prevention in the first instance, but one of the most important things is when I've worked with companies that have had ransomware or cyber extortion, if you have backups, that makes this issue go away. And so backups become, very important. But when there is an attack, there's a number of legal issues that can arise. One of the difficulties is going to be determining the scope and the nature of the breach. And that's going to take some time. It can take days or weeks or even months to know when this attack started, how it started, how many systems may have been affected. And one of the things that we recommend in that uncertain period of doing an investigation is to operate under an attorney-client privilege, because that will allow you to obtain the information you need and then make an assessment on what you have and what the legal obligations are for that. As part of any incident response, having an incident response team or plan is very important, but most significantly, we recommend that it be tailored to your situation, the types of risk that you might confront, and that you test it. Because when you test it, you'll know when it works, when you most need it. So thank you very much. These are some of the highlights and trends that we wanted to share with you today. Thank you.
To listen to other panels from the 2017 10th Anniversary Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference, visit our Hedge Fund University at morganlewis.com/hedgefunduniversity. If you have any questions or would like more information on the topics addressed in this podcast, please contact a Morgan Lewis attorney at morganlewis.com. This podcast is provided as a general informational service to clients and friends of Morgan Lewis & Bockius LLP. It should not be construed as and does not constitute legal advice on any specific matter, nor does this message create an attorney-client relationship. These materials may be considered attorney advertising in some states. Please note that any prior results discussed in the material do not guarantee similar outcomes. Read more about Morgan Lewis and its hedge funds practice at morganlewis.com/hedgefunduniversity.